This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to yet another episode of Weekend Ag Matters, brought to you by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Anna Hastert, your host this week, joined by Dustin Hoffman. Dustin, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That's great. Well, we got some news to share with everybody this week. A lot has happened within the past 2 weeks, and we kind of went through a little bit of a lull on the news side, it felt like, before this, but there's definitely a lot to talk about this week. So, Dustin, why don't you start us off with the Section 232 tariffs?
Yeah, just, you know, maybe a few hours after we put the finishing touches on this show last week, President Trump finally, I wouldn't say gave in to pressure, but took the advice of a lot of ag groups, a lot of members of Congress from both sides of the aisle and from trade representatives, that the Section 232 steel and aluminum tariffs needed to come off against Canada and Mexico. Those seemed to be the biggest hurdle that was facing USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, otherwise known as NAFTA 2.0. There's other considerations that were involved, but that was really the biggest hurdle. In fact, Senator Grassley had told the president, don't even bother sending the bill to the House because it's never going to get through as long as those are still attached. And as of right now, as far as we know, the bill, the trade agreement still hasn't even been sent to the Congress. But now with that big hurdle off, you know, there's a lot of pressure being put on now Speaker Pelosi to ask the president to have that agreement sent up. I know there's other disagreements that the House Democrats have had with the agreement, but as many members of Congress told us during our Washington Watch visit when I was out there, that some of those things can't be settled in a trade agreement that's already been ratified. That stuff's going to have to come later. But they said, you know, Mexico was holding off on, and Canada was holding off on actually really putting this through because those tariffs were still on, and they wanted to see that act of good faith from the president to take those off, because the whole point of renegotiating this was because those tariffs were put on in the first place.
Yeah, really great move, especially for those in farm country to see a little bit of optimism maybe provided here. And it's going to be interesting to see what the producer sentiment looks like after this big move. I would imagine that farmers are feeling a little bit more optimistic about trade. Of course, we're still trying to hash things out with China, and those things have kind of reached a standstill, it looks like. But yeah, definitely good news. And it would be great to have at least one trade deal in the books and done. And then we can always focus a little bit more heavily on the next one.
You know, and it was kind of interesting. Ag negotiator Greg Dowd, who works with the U.S. Trade Representative, had said that, you know, right now there's a lot of dominoes in trade. He goes, we just want one of them to fall. He goes, whether it's China, whether it's USMCA, whether it's the European Union, he goes, we need to get one of them to fall to start the effect. And hopefully this will, hopefully we get USMCA on its way.
Right. Dustin, thanks for sharing the latest information on that agreement. Moving forward in chronological order, I guess, here. Mm-hmm. But I was in Lexington, Kentucky recently. I actually headed out shortly after the news came in about the Section 232 tariffs, did a little bit of sightseeing, and then I attended the 119 conference, which is Alltech's Ideas Conference. Really great conference, learned a lot. Alltech, I wasn't really familiar with the company heading into the conference, but I learned a lot about them. They're very progressive, very forward-thinking, and really are challenging producers to think outside of the box and think a little bit differently and move away from maybe some more traditional ways of thinking about farming. And I think that's what's needed. And especially when they brought up what's going on in regards to antibiotic resistance and for these antibiotics that we're treating our herds with, as well as just resistance to some of the chemicals that we're applying to our crops. You know, we have to think about what happens if we reach a point where all the tools in our toolbox no longer work. Then what are we going to do? So I really like that they were encouraging producers to think a little bit differently and be prepared for maybe some of the things that'll come along here in the future. And a lot of great content that I got from that conference, and still some stories to publish here within the next couple of weeks. But one story that I would like for you to head on over to iowaagnet.com to look at is the one that I published about the African swine fever virus. Alltech and Pipestone Veterinary Services had partnered together to do more research into the African swine fever virus, and they actually have a feed additive if blended with contaminated feed would prevent the transmission of that virus to the hog, which is phenomenal. We have pretty good control over those feed and feed ingredients that are coming in from China with that holding period that we have when they enter into the United States. I think it's roughly 30 days that feed needs to be on hold. But if we ever came to a point where we weren't able to hold that feed, or just something else happened, you know, some kind of crisis, that we would have this in place that maybe if African swine fever virus slipped through the protocols that we have in place, that only a couple farms would be affected, and then all those other producers would have protection from it entering into their farm. So really great story. Once again, you can find that on our website, iowaagnet.com. Moving forward from my trip here, we have Trade Aid. That was something that came out later this week, and not as exciting as we thought it would be, was it?
It was pretty anticlimactic, and I know you listened in on that. You've been following that story here for the last couple days. We were hoping to get some definite. There was a lot of rumors going around as to what was going to be in it, and we really didn't get much very, very clear details in there.
Right. And the main reason that we didn't get clear details this time, Dustin, was the USDA understands that farmers are still trying to get this year's crop in, and they definitely don't want the prices of the trade aid payment to affect farmers' planting decisions. They want farmers, instead of not saying that farmers are depending on or relying on these payments, but they don't want farmers to make a decision as to what they're going to plant based on these payments. They want farmers to plant based off of market conditions, what works best for them and their operation, as well as many other factors. No, they haven't provided us any hard details about, oh, are we going to get 1 cent per bushel for corn, or are we going to get $2 per bushel for soybeans? We don't know any of that yet. But what we do know is that President Trump has approved to increase, or has authorized the USDA to provide up to $16 billion in aid this time around. Now, that's a couple billion dollars more than the last round of payments that we did see. And again, the monies will be funneled through the market facilitation program, which a lot of our crop producers are familiar with, also be disseminated through the food purchase distribution program, as well as the agricultural trade promotion program. Now, something that's a little bit different with the market facilitation program that you'll want to make note of is that there's going to be a one-time payment, and it's going to be based off of county, or it's going to be based on county per county basis. So Bill Northey, who is USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation now, talked about that a little bit more. And we, of course, more details can be found on our website, iowaagnet.com. But just note that there's going to be a little bit of changes on how these payments are rationed this time around. And you could expect the first round of payments to come out around July/August. So sometime soon. And then they'll also hand out additional payments later, depending on our progress in the U.S.-China trade negotiations, as well as the damage to producers. So we're going to kind of keep an eye on that moving forward. There's not many details right now besides the slight changes in how payments are going to be made and what factors are made into those baseline numbers. But other than that, not a whole lot new on that front. Taking a look at something else that happened later this week is the disaster bill. Now, Dustin, you've been covering that pretty closely since the flooding began. Let's talk about where we're at in regards to a disaster bill to hopefully help some of these producers, as well as just rural families that have been affected by this disaster.
You know, it's the news we've been waiting for many weeks. You know, Iowa and Nebraska, this has been going on now for over 2 months since the flooding began, and we haven't even been waiting near as long for some help as places like Georgia, Alabama, places that were affected by Hurricane Michael, wildfires in California last summer. There's been a lot of places waiting for a disaster bill. It's been hung up. The House voted last week to get it approved, and they did approve one, but when I talked with Senator Ernst in Washington in her office last week, she also did say that bill, that version, had a lot of partisan riders attached to it that the Senate really didn't want to see. The Senate wanted to keep that stuff clear and just have a strong bipartisan bill. They got that through, and they voted it through on Thursday by a vote of 85-8. I would still love to meet those 8 senators that said no to helping people, but anyway, it went through. The House expected to vote on it on Friday. We're still waiting here at press time to find out if that's being taken up. And the president, who wanted to put some more border security measures in there, didn't get those, but said, you know what, $19 billion package, let's get it done, let's get it off and get it off the table. I know Senator Ernst was one of those pushing hard for it, because there was some money earmarked to help Iowa and Nebraska. Now, there's going to be more money coming because those numbers haven't been finalized yet. But again, other areas of the country have been still waiting for their aid and have had their numbers finalized. It was hung up over things about Puerto Rico. There's more funding for Puerto Rico. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said, we got what we wanted for Puerto Rico. Let's just park the partisan and let's go help the people out and get this done. And it went through again, like I said, 85-8 on Thursday. Here, as we're recording before we put this to press, still waiting to see what the House is going to do, but the president has said he will sign it and hopefully at least now finally get some money rolling to where it needs to go.
Yeah, well, Dustin, I think that all the stories that we've covered so far here in our introduction, a lot of positive things happening for the ag community. And that's some nice news to hear after things have looked a little bit depressing lately. So hold on. There's still hope. You should still have faith. And we hope that a couple of our other segments throughout this program will shine a positive light on things that are happening in farm country and things that will help you as a producer. So with that, we're going to wrap up our opening remarks here. And we hope that you stay tuned for all that's in store.
Farm Credit Services of America is pleased to report record cashback dividends of more than $230 million. For many of our customer owners, the share of earnings that benefits their operations and helps support their local communities is needed this year more than ever. We're proud to have shared more than $1.7 billion since 2004. Discover the power of ownership at fcsamerica.com. Agriculture works here.
Data is data is data. Unless you work with FS, then your data comes with expert insight. Tapping into a wide range of technologies through MyField, your FS crop specialist evaluates trial data from your farm, along with only the most qualified aggregated data that reveals trends in your area. With MyField, your FS crop specialist delivers the insights you need to build your ROI. Learn how results from FS nitrogen trials can be applied to your farm at fsmyfield.com. FS, bringing you what's next.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Dustin Hoffman. We're less than a week away from the beginning of the summer driving season. If the EPA gets its act together, we could be seeing E15 year-round. However, if the rule is not finalized, we will not be able to buy E15 on June 1st. While out in Washington, D.C., I had the chance to sit down with Bob Dineen from the Renewable Fuels Association. We had a nice chat about getting E15 open for year-round sales.
We're here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network at the 2019 Washington Watch Issues Forum at the Renewable Fuels Association, and talking to a voice everybody's pretty well familiar with when we talk biofuels. He's now the Senior Strategic Advisor with Renewable Fuels Association, Mr. Bob Dineen. Mr. Dineen, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Oh, thank you.
So, renewable fuels, boy, we are really in a point in time right now where growth hopefully is going to be happening here in the next couple weeks.
Well, we hope so. I mean, EPA is true to its word. It'll finalize a rule allowing for the year-round sale of E15 beginning on June 1st. Now, I've been in Washington a long time, and I've not really ever seen an agency, never mind one as dysfunctional as EPA can be, finalize a rule within 6 weeks of it being proposed. But that's what EPA is going to have to do. Can they get it done? Absolutely they can. And hopefully in two and a half weeks we can be talking about what a great day this is for consumers across the country.
Now, the cherry on top of this has been hopefully getting E15 year-round, but there's also some drawbacks, at least in some talk still going on about things that haven't been so friendly in their proposal.
Well, they added a lot of RIN reform measures to the overall proposal. Now, I'm not certain that in a final rule those RIN reform proposals will be included. I looked through the docket that was filed. They got more than 30,000 comments. I didn't see more than a handful that were in support of those RIN reform measures. Virtually everybody said, no, this is a solution in search of a problem, and there's no need to mess with the market in the way that EPA was proposing. So hopefully they'll either not propose or delay, think about a little bit more, the RIN reform measures, and move forward on what there was virtual unanimous support for, and that was moving forward on the E15 rule.
And so what's it going to take to, let's say they go ahead and June 1st, they say, hey, we're going to go. We're going to make this work. What's it going to be a turnaround? I mean, there are stations, obviously, that already have E15, so it's just going to be business as usual for them, just going all year round. But to implement more stations that maybe are going to want to bring it up.
Well, that will take some time, and it's not going to happen overnight. Our estimate is in the first summer of the program, you might see another 50 million gallons of ethanol being used in E15 as a result of the availability to go year-round. But even for some of those stations in Iowa that are selling E15 today, they had to remove E15 during the summer months. So they'll be able to continue using the product, and that will have a big impact. Look, E15 use is going to grow over time because the fact of the matter is it is a higher octane fuel at a lower price, and consumers are going to say, why shouldn't I have that higher performing fuel without it hurting my wallet, actually save a little bit more money and go get a cup of coffee while I'm here? So you will see E15 grow, but it's going to take a while.
And, of course, right now, the way things have been going, you know, courtesy of the last head of the EPA, it's caused demand destruction. I mean, you have facilities in Iowa that aren't even operating right now because there's just no money in it for them to do it.
2.5 billion gallons of ethanol demand is what they destructed over the past couple of years by giving out waivers to the renewable fuel standard to companies like Exxon and Chevron. Now, they were abusing authority that was given to them by Congress for small refineries. By no one's definition is Exxon a small refinery. And so that has to stop. If on June 1 they give us 50 million gallons of increased demand because of the E15 rule, and then on June 15th they grant another 40 waivers that destruct another billion gallons of demand, I think the administration will be signaling loud and clear who it really values in the fuel distribution marketplace, and it's not the farmer.
You know, and I heard an analogy, and it came from a young man who was talking to me about what I do at work, and I tell him about some of the fights we go in because he hears me talking about, you know, these issues. And it was my son, and he said, so what you're saying is, it'd be like in the grocery store, if I wanted to buy Cheerios, fine, I could buy Cheerios, but it's like Cheerios trying to tell me that I can't buy Lucky Charms only certain times of the year.
Your son has got a future in politics because he can distill a fairly complex argument to something that everybody can understand. Yes. Where can I hire him?
Well, in about 10 years, we'll talk. But that's just it. It's been one of those things of it's just adding another choice for consumers, and it's been one part of the industry saying, well, no, you can't have that choice.
Well, and to take the analogy a step further, it's like EPA saying you can only buy Cheerios from September to May, and you can't buy them from June through September. Well, no, I want my Cheerios year-round. A good bowl of Cheerios in the summer months is actually a really good thing. But that's what EPA was doing with E15 by denying that high-octane fuel to consumers during the high driving season.
And so as we're looking at the time frame running out, what do you think that prospect does, the EPA getting it done and getting it done right?
Look, I'm the ever-optimist, right? I think they will get it done. I expect the oil companies to quickly try to litigate. I don't think that they will be successful. I do think we'll see summer E15 available this year, and consumers will benefit. Are we going to have to continue to fight? Sure. What I don't want to see, though, is for us to have the benefit of E15 and then see another billion gallons of demand destruction through more small refinery waivers. I hope that's not what the future is.
Well, Bob, I thank you very much for giving us the insight about what's going on. And again, hopefully in a few weeks we're talking about this being done and getting off in the right direction.
Thanks, Dustin. And make sure that your son contacts me as soon as he graduates.
I will make sure to do that, Bob. That's Bob Dineen with the Renewable Fuels Association here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
So we have 1 week left to find out if the EPA can pull off the fastest rulemaking process in history. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Anna Hastert.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Anna Hastert. Now, before I start my story this week, it should be noted that the African swine fever virus is not in the United States. And I will repeat that, the African swine fever virus has not entered the United States. And that's for a couple different reasons. One of them being the USDA and Customs and Border Patrol have implemented phenomenal efforts to keep this virus off of our shores. Dustin recently spoke with USDA Undersecretary of Agriculture for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, Greg Ibaugh, and Undersecretary Ibaugh said that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has ramped up its efforts with Customs and Border Patrol to strengthen its defense against this deadly virus.
We are training 60 new detector dog teams that help sniff out any illegally imported products carried by passengers or in cargo. We are working to identify high-risk pathways for illegal products, trace the origin, and shut down those pathways. Simply put, we find smuggled items, including meat products, and take enforcement actions to prevent bad actors from continuing to illegally move product into the United States.
Aside from what's happening at the border, the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, also known as APHIS, is working with producers and veterinarians on biosecurity measures and response.
We'll be ready. We have ramped up our diagnostic capabilities at facilities affiliated with the National Animal Health Laboratory Network. We have reviewed our response plans with our state and industry partners and have tested those plans through exercises.
Now, unfortunately, it looks like we're still years away from a suitable vaccine for the African swine fever virus, but there is still hope. I recently attended 119 Alltech's Idea Conference in Lexington, Kentucky, and Alltech recently partnered with Pipestone Veterinary Services to do more research into African swine fever, and they've actually found a feed additive, if mixed with contaminated feed, will stop the transmission of that virus from feed to swine. So let's look a little bit more at this. APC is a feed biosecurity measure that Alltech has in place today. Now, the product isn't available immediately today, but should be available within the next couple of weeks. And here's how it works. APC, which is the feed additive, is rationed into feed at 15 pounds per ton. Now, a number of studies conducted by Pipestone Veterinary Services shows that the product is capable of mitigating or eliminating the risk of viral transmission through feed, and they looked at different viruses like PED, PRRS, and Seneca Valley, and the product has shown efficacy against all three viruses. So there is great hope that this would also have efficacy against African swine fever virus if needed. Now, it's important to note that roughly 20 to 25% of Chinese hog farms are comparable to large operations here in the United States. With that being said, there's still lack of biosecurity measures in those modernized production systems. And Brian McCauley, Senior Vice President of Sales for Alltech, has more on this for us.
As the market in China develops, we're going to see greater biosecurity, and they're going to start paying attention to things like virus transmission in feed, as well as feed trucks and implementing truck washes, because that's, again, where we see the biggest challenges is moving from farm to farm.
Now, I also spoke with Dr. John DeYoung, who is president of Pipestone Nutrition and had a lot to do with this study. And he says that the farms that would benefit from incorporating this feed additive called APC are those large-scale hog farms, particularly those in China right now. But if it were to enter the United States, he does have a couple of ideas of who else would benefit from this feed additive.
The farmers that would have interest in looking at a product like this are ones that I would say are in high disease areas where disease transmission via feed might be of high concern to them. The other ones would be producers who have breeding stock.
Now, raw products sourced from China pose the biggest threat for African swine fever virus reaching other countries, such as the United States. However, like I stated earlier, we have strict protocol in place to protect the domestic swine herd. For instance, there's a mandatory period when shipping containers reach the U.S. shores that they must be stored in a climate-controlled warehouse for roughly 30 days to make sure that they're clean of all viruses so that we can still use those products that we're importing from China, but also not affecting our swine herd. If you want to take a more in-depth look at these stories that we had here on our network this week, feel free to hop on over to iowaagnet.com. I also encourage you to sign up for our e-newsletter, which is called Ag Matters Daily, so you can stay in the loop and get a firsthand look at these stories the day that they are produced. And the best way to go about subscribing for our newsletter is, again, going to iowaagnet.com and clicking the subscribe tab in the right-hand corner of the website. That wraps up this week's edition of Week in Ag Matters. On behalf of Dustin Hoffman and I, we thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us this time next week.